The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? A really good episode this week. Fascinating. If you're a fan of the old school rock and roll, this is Tracy Guns. He was not only a founding member of LA Guns, but a founding member of Guns N' Roses. That's where the term Guns N' Roses comes from, Tracy Guns and Axl Rose. Some really cool stories with this dude, a really fun episode. Don't forget, we do the show every Wednesday, every Saturday. And I believe right now you still have a couple of days left. If you go to gasdigitalnetwork.com, use the code SDR30, you get a full 30-day free trial only for the weekend of Memorial Day weekend, Friday to Monday. So go on now, get that done, because you get a 30-day free trial, and you have 30 days to think about it, cancel it, whatever you want to do. The 30-day trial is reenacted just for the weekend. And right now, here it is, the episode with Mr. Tracy Guns of the SDR.
This is the intro to the shit show.
It is the SDR show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. With me, as always these days, Shannon, our producer, Ani Moosh in the background, taking notes. Tracy, we don't let her turn on her camera, but once in a while she does. Bill Schultz is back to do the co-hosting duties. Thank you so much for being here, sir.
I apologize that I put on my camera that you guys have to look at this. Yeah,
I'll allow it. And now, a dude that I would say I know you, fuck, I don't know, 20-something years.
At least, I haven't
seen you in, I think, maybe 10 years or something like that.
Well, think about it, because if it's 2021, you know, it's like these 20s don't really count. It's
right,
weird.
Right.
So it's like you have to add whatever you think plus 21 years.
Let's say at least 20-something years. It is, yeah. Tracy Guns. How are you, buddy? How's everything?
Good. Things are good. Things are fucking all over the place.
That's for sure. One thing that, by the way, you know, I'd always, and I say this at the top of every show, one of the things I enjoy the most, I know Tracy from back in the old radio show days when we did our radio shows. Those would be 5-minute interviews and not like in-depth sitting and talking.
Right.
Then if we were to go out afterwards or hang out afterwards, we're not talking about your life. You know, we're just kind of hanging out.
Yeah.
So when I get to do these research things and learn about people, I didn't know, for instance, other than Shannon, me, Bill, and Tracy, it's Jews all around. I didn't know you were a Jew.
Gross.
So congratulations on that. Yeah. And then also, by the way, I don't even know if I've ever told you this story. We'll get into the new album with Michael Sweet and what's going on with all the guns and all that stuff. But a couple of things. I was a DJ, Bill, you know this, I've talked about it, at Limelight back in the day when Limelight Sunday's Rock and Roll Church was like the place to be. And there's a story that I've told 1,000 times because it was such a crazy night. LA Guns, Cocked and Loaded hit, Ballad of Jane hit big. And now LA Guns is playing Limelight, right? It's a big night for Limelight. It got so fucking crowded that the fire department shut us down.
Yeah.
And I was a DJ and promoter, and we had to shut the music down. The band had to stop playing. There was, I think, 5,000 people in a place that held maybe 2,000 people. It was just a wall of people. It was insane. And then every once in a while, just to fuck with people, my co-host, my partner and I, Alan, we'd put on the beginning of a rock song to get everyone riled up, but we couldn't play it. So we'd stop it right away. And it was always like Enter Sandman or It Smells Like Teen Spirit or something to get everyone go crazy. And then we'd kill it. And then people would start throwing beers at us and shit. But we were just trying to keep everyone entertained. But to my moment, my lifetime, that moment at Limelight with LA Guns was one of the craziest nights I've ever experienced.
The thing also about that night that other people didn't see is our dressing room had a door leading outside to the street. Mm-hmm. It had this like safety door, or fire door or something. And back then, you know, I was crazy. So there were two girls, one I had met in Philadelphia 2 days earlier, and then a girl I knew from New York City. And Corky, you know Corky.
Yeah.
Corky was there monitoring the door. So he would let one girl come in, and we'd hang out for like 5 minutes. And then Corky would say, oh, the band's going back on now. Push her out the door, and then go get the other girl and bring her in. I mean, nothing exciting happened, obviously. But I just remember this, like, really, because I wasn't asking him to do that.
Well, that's a good man right there. He just knows the right way to handle the situation.
Corky had his shit together. Then this other guy shows up. Corky comes over. Hey, there's a guy with a guitar. I'm like, oh. So now this guy walks in through those fire doors with this giant guitar case with a red Firebird in it. And he's like, hey, man, I just need $300, man. I'm not doing good. I'm like, okay. So all this shit went down while the club was closed. And I'm just sitting there on this chair waiting to play. I think back then I had like some, 20-year-old cut off sweatpants on with holes in it. I had a mohawk. I'm just like still a kid back then.
Right. You're only a couple years older than me. So maybe you were 23 or 24.
Yeah, I was just going to say 23.
Yeah.
And there was like a pile of cash because the merchandise money kept coming, like Corky would go collect the merchandise cash as people were buying shit. So we didn't leave it out there. So I had this pile of cash over here. And I don't know whose it was, but there were 17. I kept counting them, vials of 1 gram of cocaine on this other table.
The old, I don't know who it was routine. Whose it was routine. Sure.
Yeah. It was just like, I remember thinking to myself while I was sitting there, because years earlier when I was 19, I was living there and playing with Cheryl Rixon and living in New York City. Mm-hmm. And I had met Mick Jagger all the way upstairs.
The VIP room, the way it upstairs VIP room. Yeah.
Right. And that was the last time I had seen vials of cocaine, like on a table, just like these vials. And I was sitting there, 23 years old, just complete chaos. And I was so calm. I was just like, this is my life.
That's great. That was such good. That album, first of all, the album was so great, but that was such a moment. For me, I was on the outside looking in. I wasn't in the band, but I was a promoter and a DJ there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That night was just so crazy. And you touched on this a little bit, which I will say, held true until the last time I saw an LA Gun show, which is hot chicks come to LA Gun shows more so than other bands of the era. You want to loop in, the bands that were big at that time. I would put Motley in the same level, maybe Faster Pussycat too, for some weird reason. But the other bands did not draw the hot chicks like LA Gun did.
We definitely like tapped into some weird budding model demographic.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. It was strange because when Man of the Moon came out and Waking the Dead came out on those later albums came out, it still was, if I go to an LA Gun show tonight, I'm going to see some fucking hot chicks, which is just, I don't know why that was more than any other band of the era.
But it made it really horrible for me because I didn't want to be with a lot of girls. I always wanted to be in love with a girl, right? So my ex, we were together for like 27 years, she's this Finnish Nordic thing. And now my wife is Danish Nordic thing. So it's like, there's so many, so used to looking at these, alien faces. That's what I call these model faces.
Yeah, the Swedish Scandinavian definitely has an alien vibe.
Yeah. Completely. Yeah. So it was just like, really so confusing, especially at that time, 23 years old, I'm trying to be this normal guy making records and touring and stuff like that, keep steady relationships. It was insane back then. It was really, just not, not.
And then the last thing I'm going to say that's, tooting my own horn here, because just of my LA Guns history. You then, of course, we'll get into some history with you in a minute, but obviously there was a big band you did with Nikki Sixx called Brides of Destruction, with London LeGrand and whatnot. But for my old radio show, The Tour Bus, you guys did our 4-year anniversary party at the Starland Ballroom where we broadcast it live. And that was one of my favorite nights, I think. And two of my favorite nights are associated with you, sir.
That was like the loudest concert I've ever played. Yeah. Like even when I watched the video back, it was so distorted and so crazy loud that I was just like, why do we play that loud? like, what is the point of all that volume? You know, because the band was good, you know? And I remember I did one show with, or two shows with Motorhead, and Lemmy just said, you just got to turn all the way up, you know? And I'm like, yeah, this is the Motorhead thing, right? And I had a rental amp, a 50-watt Marshall, that was the most God loud amplifier. And I had one day to learn a whole Motorhead set, seven of the songs I'd never heard before. So we just turned up. I have no idea what the hell we did, but we walked off stage and Lemmy goes, that was pretty heavy.
Yeah, I'm like, and you had no idea.
Know? We couldn't hear anything. It was just like,
so you actually filled in. You filled in for two shows for a Motorhead. Yeah. I never knew that.
That's impressive. When it's that loud, does that translate to a good live album? I would assume one doesn't work for the other.
No, I mean it really can't. I mean, you know, it's interesting. LA Guns has a live record coming out, which is just all the songs from Cocked and Loaded. And we did it during a live stream. And the live stream, you know, you play at studio levels, you know, like you know, you want it to come across good through the bandwidth. It's the best sounding live thing we've ever done, you know, at these lower volumes. And you can hear the vocals clearly. And, you know, the guitars still sound huge and the drums sound huge, but it's just all that volume is insane. And I'm not deaf. So that's good. But from now on, I think I'm going to say something.
I don't understand, by the way, as a concert goer for most of my life, the reason or rationale behind the blast the shit out of everybody where you can't hear. It's always way for me. Even as a kid, I say, well, that's way too fucking loud. No one can hear anything. It just sounds like a wall of sound. Yeah. Some people love that, I guess, but you don't really get to hear the nuance of any band.
Well, it's interesting. Like, if it's done correctly and it's loud and powerful, then it makes sense. But there's a threshold, man. There's like a line that you cross, and the high end is just like so insanely nuts. Like, my ex used to tell me all the time for years and years and years, she goes, why is your guitar so loud? And, you know, I was just like, it's the way it is. I had no reasonable explanation ever, you know. And then I used to just think in my, you know, insecure mind, after she would say, I go, maybe my guitar sounds just totally shit, you know,
I've been to a few shows. Sorry, Bill. I've been to a few shows recently where, well, not recently, obviously, but, you know, within the
last
year.
You and I, Ralph, we went to go see Corey Glover. It was a small seated venue. And it was so loud that we had to leave after.
Right. That was horrible. I remember that. That was unbearable. We saw Corey Glover together. It was unbearable. But I went to MSG after they put in the whole new sound. Wow. And it was interesting because the biggest problem always is it's a wall of sound emanating from one spot.
Yeah.
But in new venues, they have it coming from everywhere. So it no longer has to be that. Like, Shannon, when you brought that up, I remembered we were fucking miserable. It was idiotic. It was too fucking loud. But now it can be everywhere loud and not overbearing, which is interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you know, time goes on, and I will say one thing about, you know, all this digital technologies, it really makes things easy to control. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of the upside of it. I mean, you lack some dimension, but things generally sound good because, you know, sound men and engineers and stuff, they use digital analyzers on their phones, you know, so they can like see where the shitty frequencies are and what's going to hurt people.
That's
and they
wild.
Just go, dial that out, you know, like that. So
and also technology has helped me a lot with my female trafficking sex business because makes it easier to just see where they're going. You know, it's a lot less work for me is what I'm saying. So by the way, I was watching some Tracy Guns interviews and I was amazed at how many people don't know this. And Ryan Roxy being one of them from legendary band Electric Angels, played with Alice Cooper, whatnot. But he said he didn't know. And it's something that I just thought was part of the zeitgeist of rock and roll, which is that the reason it's called Guns N' Roses is because of Tracy Guns and Axl Rose. And the amount of people that don't know that boggles my fucking mind.
When Ryan brought that up, I was like, what? Like, you know, I've known Ryan like more than half my life, you know, been in the same circle of people. When he said that, he also had this like really big smile when he was telling that story, like this epiphany, like, oh, you know, kind of moment,
yeah.
You know? Yeah. But yeah, it is weird when people don't
realize, because LA Guns actually predates it all. LA Guns was first and Hollywood Rose, I guess, was around the same time. Is that right?
Well, I guess Hollywood Rose was technically first. You know, because Izzy was already doing that. We were living together. Mm-hmm. And then my little high school band was called Pyrus, like some Greek god or something. And then I changed the name of that band to LA Guns. So technically Hollywood Rose would have been first. Yeah.
Okay.
I stole the idea from Hollywood Rose to make LA Guns.
Oh, okay. I guess it's pretty close. I didn't even realize the LA Hollywood thing. That didn't even click in my head until just now, which is kind of funny. Yeah. And then at some point, I guess the two bands merged. Is that a good way to say that?
Sort of. I mean, I'll say it really quick. Izzy was in London, okay, that band London.
Right.
There was no Hollywood Rose anymore. Axl was singing in LA Guns. LA Guns in London did a show together at the Troubadour one night.
Mm-hmm.
And the rumor has it that Nader detuned all my guitars, the singer from London, which I'm going to back that theory up because it was weird. Go on stage, all my guitars have been tuned to like, you know, Z demolished, you know, just like what the fuck? Axl goes lunar, goes insane, grabs a London poster, pulls me shoulder, tears the London poster up. These motherfuckers, blah, 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 this whole thing. So the gig's over. Izzy quits London over this scenario because Izzy and Axl were best friends. They grew up in Indiana together. And my manager or our manager, this guy Raz, fires Axl. This for all happened
for what he did on stage,
right? For you know, being this guy.
Mm-hmm.
But we're being all driving Axl home in the car together. You know, Axel's in the front seat next to the manager guy, and I'm in the back seat. You know, that I can't believe you did that. I can't work with you. We all live together. You know, it's like yo, you know, you mellow out. Axl was calm because he had let all the steam out, and I'm just in the back on, you know, what the hell's going on here? So we get home. We're sitting on the couch. Our manager goes to his bedroom. And Axel's like, well, what are we going to do? You know? And I go, well, I mean, I guess we just keep going somehow. And, you know, something. He goes, well, you know, we should start a label, you know, and we should just write and record. And then we're going to put out our own records. And we don't need anybody. And I'm like, yeah. We don't need anybody because, you know, it's us, you know, we're the kings of, you know, the shittiest part of the valley we were living in. And so we came up with the name of the label would be Guns N' Roses Records, you know, and they're like, yeah, Guns N' Roses Records. Okay, let's do that. And then I'm like, what if we just started a band called Guns N' Roses? You know, and he's like, oh yeah, let's do that instead.
That you seems know, I go, way easier.
Yeah, I go, I'm going to call Izzy in the morning and we're gonna get Izzy in our new band, you know? And that's it. That's the whole story.
That's amazing.
It's a great story.
I didn't know that.
You know, it's like less brain consuming than Bill and Ted. You know, it's just like that's what happened.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
Was there a point, and then we'll keep going, but was there a point where it was like the quintessential Guns N' Roses lineup that you think of with you instead of Slash, like it was Duff and everybody else and you, that was the band at one point?
Yeah, that was it. And then what happened was those guys started adulting hard. Like they were like turning into what they perceived being an adult as, you know, like, let's do everything that comes by our face, you know, and then let's not be friends anymore and all live separate lives and, you know, not be cool with each other. You know, and I was like 3 or 4 years younger than whoever the next oldest guy was. So I was 19 when I left. And I was watching this circus, man, just like, I'm not ready for this. Like, I just want to play guitar, write all these great songs. And I was had enough confidence in myself. You know, I knew how great the band was, but I'm like, well, I wrote all this shit pretty much. So I can just go and do my own thing, you know, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And they were so mad at me. They wanted to kill me. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, hey, you guys are insane. You know, like you're literally like, I don't even know you guys anymore. You know, you two guys were my best friends for the last 2 years. I don't know you anymore, you know? And I'm just trying to be with my girlfriend, play the guitar and, you know, have people go, yay. That's all I wanted. You know what I mean? It's all I wanted. And Izzy and Axel will get on the phone with me and it was so passive aggressive because Izzy's totally a passive guy. Mm-hmm. And he would always start the phone, you know, the conversation. Well, I mean, you know, look at it this way. You know, if you just stay in the band and we'll be cool, we'll mellow out, everything will be fine. And I'd hear Axel in the background. If that motherfucker doesn't come to rehearsal, I'm going to kick his fucking ass. And you tell him, you know, and I'm just like, you know, my girlfriend's like over there, fuck those guys, you don't need those guys, you know. So, and I had braces, literally I still had braces.
That's amazing.
You know, I'm dealing with like these adult real world, you know, guys. I always call that, you know, when guys turn 23 or 24, it's second puberty.
Right. They're trying to prove themselves and be looked at as adults when you're really not yet. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like me, I never thought about that. I mean, I was a kid till I was 45. I was a child. My voice wasn't even done changing till I was in my mid 40s, you know, and it was just so overwhelming to me. And I was a little bit sad, of course, you know, I was like, well, look, you know, I put this band together, spent all this time.
And they kept the name. They didn't change it to Slash.
I know. How cool would that be, though? Slash and Roses.
Yeah, it sounds more powerful, I guess. Sounds more manly.
No sounds offense. More slashier.
More slashy. If it was a heavier band, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, but anyway, that's the entire Guns N' Roses story.
It's a great story, though. It's crazy that you... And then, obviously, at some point, you found Phil Lewis LA Guns started, right? I read a couple of things that I thought was crazy with that, and then we'll get into everything else. But I didn't know that Never Enough was the first time you hired outside writers. That's pretty interesting to me. And that you didn't want Ballad of Jane to be on that record.
Not on that record. No, it was too early for me. You know, it was a great song. And it was a great song when it wasn't Ballad of Jane. It was called She's So Cold, I believe.
Was it written about Shannon?
What's that?
I said, was it written about Shannon? Because she's a cold bitch, Tracy, just so you know.
Are you Scandinavian? Never mind.
My mom's German.
I only go out with Scandinavian. So I had this argument and Kovac motherfucked me in this, you know, nothing but a good time. But Tracy didn't even want Ballad of Jane on the record because he knows everything, of course. Well, I did know everything. If we would have put that song out on the next record when we were mature on Hollywood Vampires, well, then we would have even had longer success.
Right. Makes sense. I get that.
It would have come out at a more appropriate time. But we were coming off the heels of Electric Gypsy and Sex Action. And, you know, and we were having enough success. You know, we didn't need to, you know, pull out everything on our second record. Because then everything after that is going to be compared to Ballad of Jane instead of Sex Action or Never Enough or whatever was a rock tune. And even at that time, like you said, I was 23. I wasn't ready to sell the farm and go retire after that. You know what I mean? So, I mean, luckily, obviously, you know, we had sustained success. But at the time, I wanted to keep that in our pocket. You know, I was like, hey, we don't have to, why are we in a hurry? You know, like,
so you knew that this is going to be a big, this would be a big ballad.
Everybody knew it.
Everyone knew it. It was such an omnipresent song. It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, that led to that crazy night at Limelight was that song. That's why everybody, whether you were a fan of rock or a fan of LA Guns, it didn't matter. You knew the song and you wanted to come see the band that did that song. You
know? Well, here's the trick. Here's the trick. And here's why a song like that works. Everything the Rolling Stones pretty much did was in the key of G major and an open tuning. And it has a certain sound that human psychology is attracted to. Mm-hmm. So if you write a rock song in the key of G major, well, that's going to be your best bet. There's two things psychological. There's that, or if you write a progression that's known as a minor sixth progression, and I'll give you an example. Don't Fear the Reaper, Mother by Danzig, and the end of Stairway to Heaven. They all have this minor six chord progression.
Okay.
Interesting.
And those sounds and the G major, kind of every rockabilly song, da 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 da, every country song is this. These are the two most appealing things to the general public in any country, speaking any language, listening to any kind of music.
Wow.
So when that song got written, I had already known, because I'm a music historian, and I was when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, that's my thing. I study music. I knew it. And I knew the vocal melody was exactly right. I knew. And Kovac's like, well, we have this. You know, why wouldn't we use it now? Because we have it. You know, it's not going anywhere. No one's going to like take the song from us and we're never going to have it, you know?
Right.
So anyways, it worked out fine, but no, I didn't want to do it
then. What if you're someone like me with zero music ability? Then how do you write the song?
Exactly how I just said it. Because you don't know that you're already predisposed to liking those two elements.
Right. Those progressions, right?
Obviously, you have zero ability to retain valuable information too, Ralph. He just gave you a recipe.
And then lastly, on the LA Guns tip, since I've known you guys, what a tumultuous, ridiculous two different touring people. You're indifferent. You think you quit four times. Who the fuck knows? But finally, it's been somewhat settled. You and Phil are LA Guns.
I own LA Guns.
You finally own LA Guns. For a while, I don't think you did, right? I think Steve had it for a while, right? Or he was touring. I don't know.
No, this was always a claim. And, you know, my biggest problem is I'm generous, nice, and I also ignore confrontation until it gets to the point where I'm like, fuck you! Go die! I fucking hate you, right? Like, that's my personality. Like, I'm like, yeah. So when I went to do Brides, I said to Phil and Steve, I go, look, I have to go do this for my mental health. You know, I don't like what we're... Uh-oh, sorry. I don't like what we're doing with the business right now. I'm going to take a break. I'm going to go do this. I'm going to do two records and then I'm going to come back. If you guys need to continue, you have my blessing.
You owned the name. You had the name.
Always. Okay. Always. So Steve had always claimed since like American Hardcore that we had this fictitious partnership and that we registered the name together and all these things. Well, when the lawyers went to do that research, it didn't exist. It never existed. This was all a big lie. This was a big fantasy. This was a manipulation. The type of person I am, I'm like, really? Oh, okay. All right. So what happened was when I went to do Brides, I had found out that all our royalties were being sent directly to Steve Riley.
Wow.
And you can't use people's royalties to pay your own personal bills and band bills, because that's your intellectual property.
Right.
So even to this day, with the way that I settled the case, I'm way too generous. You know, I thought to myself, if I spend another $100,000 suing for $200,000, well, in theory, I could maybe get $100,000 out of this case. Right. Mm-hmm. But he has no money. Right.
Right.
If you sue the desert for water, You get sand.
You can win, but you're still not going to get the water. Right.
Right. This is why I never worry about getting sued.
Right. You still have a 4-inch penis. It's never going to get bigger. That's it. You know, it's like,
well,
bam.
I see you remember me very well, Tracy. Thank you.
Well, you're tall, so it makes up for it. So it got to this point where I'm like, and he did not want to be audited, mm-hmm. you know? So he was like saying, look, man, I just need to make a living. I got to figure this out, blah, 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 blah. And he came up with the idea, we'll call it Nichols and Riley's LA Guns. And I'm like, that's fine. As right. long as you're not pretending to be us, because we've had massive recent success.
Yeah.
So you can't just like all of a sudden, hey, we're LA Guns.
Right,
and
right.
we know that you guys all know that we've had two top 50 records in the last 3 years. But no, we're those guys. You know, so it's like a big...
Right, and that's an amazing thing about it, is that now that, you know, it's you and Phil, which I think for most people, you're the two that anyone's going to really associate with LA Guns. The recent resurgence or repopularizing of LA Guns, it's amazing.
That
so late in the game,
yeah,
it's resurging. It's wild.
It is wild. But now I have to be an adult and I have to protect it. You know, I can't just have that attitude. And my wife, you know, it drives her nuts because, I mean, people come to the house. I'm like, here's a guitar. You know, it's like, it's just my nature to where I like people to be happy and I don't want people to suffer. So anyways, we ended up settling in a way where basically he licenses the words LA Guns, you know, for free. You know, I'm not even asking for a percentage of when he plays.
You are too nice.
Yeah. You know, I'm just saying, hey, I could have taken your house. I could have taken, you know, anything you own, but I don't want you to die in the street and I don't want you to be poor. And I really love his son, Cole. And I was just got to the point with all this litigation and, you know, we had this like, you know, I live in Denmark half the time. So when we did this thing called a mediation, that mediation started at 11 p.m. Denmark time and it was 9 hours.
Oh my God.
And I just had a baby and my wife and my baby were in the bedroom and I'm in the living room. And this is our first apartment there, which was like 72 square meters. It's tiny. Mm-hmm. And I'm up doing this mediation. And finally it just got to the point where it's just going back and forth. And I'm like, how can I easily make this make sense? You know, because in the end they had no argument, you know, they had no like, well, you know, I'm an LA Guns. That was the argument. It's like, no, you're not. You're not an LA Guns. You know, you were hired by me. The bass player guy was hired by me. And it's as simple as that,
right.
You know, but you know, if you want to pretend that, you know, you came up with the name or you formed the band or it was your musical vision or that you even wrote one fucking song.
Right.
You know?
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like you could go live in that fantasy as long as it doesn't infringe on my business.
Right. Right. Because also the sad truth is to this day, you know, the name will always hold more weight no matter what the band is. That's Rolling right. Stones will fill an arena. Just saying, you know, Keith Richards or Mick Jagger won't as quickly for whatever reason. That's just how people's brains
That's
work.
That's how it works.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
And like, you know, Axl owns Guns N' Roses and it's been like 3.4 version of Guns N' Roses at this point right. with like, you know, I mean,
yeah,
that's it.
Well, the name
still sell.
The name holds the value, you know, and to strengthen the value of the name, you know, it's like Jimmy Page and Robert Plant could in theory go out as Led Zeppelin, you know.
Yeah.
Tyler and Perry could go out as Aerosmith, you know, Richards and you know, in this style of rock and roll, it's the front man and the guitar player. And my cat just brought a mouse in the house.
Oh my God.
Oh no.
Fucking winter. Anyways. So yeah, for real. Hey.
Are you in Denmark right now?
No, I'm in LA right now.
Oh, okay.
In the hills where there are mice everywhere.
It's okay if you need to take a moment to get rid of the mouse. It's okay.
I don't think I could. I think that that I have two cats. One is the hunter and one is the observer. So So I have the little gray cats attacking the mouse while the big fat orange one's going, don't do it like that. Do it like this. Then move it to the left. Everyday thing.
I mean, and then lastly, I think LA Guns, you released a single last year, but you're going to put out an album this year. Is that the plan?
Yeah, that single is on that album. We didn't think that, you know, things
right, of course.
Go this way.
Yeah. I love that you're getting up from the floor to stay away from the mouse.
Yeah.
By the way, if a mouse jumps on you during this interview, it'll be my favorite interview of all time.
It's sad. It's a little tiny baby mouse.
That means there's more coming.
At least your cats get to eat a little bit, so that's fine.
Yeah.
This cat, every day, it's a lizard, a bird, a mouse. A lizard, a bird, a mouse. And it's weird. I guess it's really seasonal because it's baby birds, baby mice, and tiny lizards.
Oh, sure.
So it's like,
That's anyway. Wild. So the single was Let You Down, and the album, is it going to be called Checkered Past? Is that right?
Checkered Past, yeah.
Yeah. Right, that's cool. And it's coming out at some point this year, I guess.
November 12th.
Okay, great. Yeah,
so it has a release date, and there's two reasons why we released that single. Number one, we needed a single. I thought it was a good time with the pandemic. It had already been going on for 3 months, and you know, I felt, hey, you know, let's put a tune out. But like Ballad of Jane, everybody heard that song and was like, whoa. Where did this come from? You know, it's like
a great song.
It came from my apartment on the fourth floor, up 8 flights of stairs in a space 2 by 6 meters where I recorded this song. You know, it's the greatest song ever. So we put it out, and the proof is in the comments, isn't it, these days? You know,
right. Yeah.
That's everything. So our fan base is a little older. They've listened to a lot more music. And so it's a good one. And so it reflects like a dimension of the new album. You know, there's other things that are similar to that sound on the record, mixed with things that are similar to Cocked and Loaded. You know what I mean? Like I always have to
appease the fan base.
Yeah. I want to be diverse, but I don't want to lose that focused impact of what, you know, guys that are now 55 are like, you know, I fucking need Sex Action over and over and over again. You know, it's like okay, got a cool.
No, don't worry, there's at least 3 tracks on there for you.
Yeah, you know, and but the biggest struggle lyrically now with Phil, and Phil has a writing partner, this guy Mitch Davis, who lives in New York, who's amazing lyricist, is my only thing is like, don't write about having sex. You know, Phil's 64, I'm 55. It's like there's got to be nothing less attractive than, you know, 64-year-old man going, yeah, baby, I'm going to give it to you, you know. And he's, you know, and he's so British, right? You know, so it's just like, you know, this whole Austin Powers thing. And it's just like, oh, you know, let's stay away from that.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's pretend we're mature and writing nice music.
I remember I saw Coverdale, you know, Whitesnake at one point, and he is probably, I don't know how old he is now, but he was probably in his 60s at that point, because he's probably whatever. And he was, he had a shirt off. He's still in good shape, but he was like rubbing his nipples a little bit on stage.
Oh boy.
And I'm like, come on, it's my grandpa doing that, for God's sakes. I mean, but as talented as he is and as amazing as he is, it's kind of hard to pull that off at that age, no matter how good a shape you're in.
It doesn't even Tom Jones leaves his shirt on.
Wait a second. The rubbing the nipples thing, should that even be done when you're 25?
I mean, if you're shredded, you know, I don't know. Look?
I mean, if you're, you know, that have that Jagger swagger, you know, I think you can pull it off. Like if, you know, you're a tall, thin, you know.
Yeah. And by the way, he's got that dual gender thing going. Well, and speaking of your kid's name Jagger, is as Jagger met Jagger?
No. Oh. But I have a picture of him with Steven Tyler, which is the next best thing.
That's close. Shannon, does this work for you at all? Does it do anything for you?
Nope.
No? Okay, just try. Okay,
I'm going to tell you, it's kind of doing something for me, Ro. Do that again.
I don't even have nipples.
All all right, now I'm erect.
Beautiful, Tracy. Beautiful. Okay, so now let's bring it up to date to the new release of Sunbomb with Michael Sweet. The name I heard, I didn't coin this, but it's funny, Guns N' Moses. That's funny because of Stryper. I get it.
Yeah,
but I will say the new album is Evil and Divine, but only three singles are out right now, to my knowledge, right? That's is that right. where we're at this point? When I first heard Life, that first scream comes on, you both look ridiculous. It's heavier than something I've heard from you guys in a long time. It just felt fucking great. Tell me how this whole thing started.
Well, I had to go and make two successful records with LA Guns, which is a problem because I'm a dad and I have two children and that live 5,500 miles apart. And, and we make these records and the label goes, hey, you know, we can make more bucks off you. So we want you to do a solo album. And I'm like, okay, I have absolutely nothing in mind. You know, like I'm not going to do an instrumental record, you know, because I would rather hang myself. And, you know, I don't know who would sing this stuff. So I said, yes, you know, I'm a working musician. I need money. I'm not independently wealthy. Let me figure this out. So me and my wife, we were living here at the time. We would do these Sunday drives up the coast and listen to heavy metal, like random heavy metal, like, you know,
like heavier metal than heavy metal. Right. Okay.
And, you know, she's Danish. She knows about black metal and things like this, you know, so she's an audio archivist. So she knows about fucking every music ever recorded on anything that was physical. So we get in the car and then I get this deal offer and then I start listening to Satyricon and I'm like, hey man, I could wrap my head around Satyricon. You know, they have this kind of like gothic Randy Rhoads-ish kind of phrasing metal thing. And then all these early influences started coming back to my head, you know, Sabbath and Scorpions and Iron Maiden's first two records and like all the stuff I listened to as a teenager. I'm like, I'm gonna fucking make a record like that. So I wrote like four songs and I'm like, whoa, who the fuck's gonna sing this shit? You know what I mean? Like,
did you write the lyrics too, or you wrote the song?
No. Okay. I never write lyrics.
Okay.
So I had, you know, this palette of, you know, metal. And so I called a bunch of friends. I even called Kirk Weinstein and Stephen Piercy, Dee Snider. I had everybody on board to sing like one song.
Right.
Great idea. Yeah.
But first I contacted Michael Sweet, you know, and because I had recently met him. I went and saw him play at the Whiskey and I really like him as a person, you know.
Yeah.
And I saw him sing with Stryper at the Whiskey and he, Jesus Christ. You know, I see what I did. And I went, holy shit. So that popped in my brain. I'm like, hey, Michael, listen. I texted him one of the songs. I go, tell me what you think about this music, you know? And right, he goes, what is that? You know, I go, I just wrote that. I go, do you want to sing on it? And he's like, hell yeah. You know, I want to sing on that. I go, well, would you like to sing on 10 more of those? And he goes, oh, you're doing a record. And I said, yeah, I'm doing a record. And he goes, okay, I'm in, you know, so had no idea how it was going to work, what the workflow was going to be or anything. But I knew that I had to finish 11 tunes and turn them in at some point. So I finished the tunes and everything musically was totally cohesive. And I'm like, all right, okay. And that took a year from that point, that day we talked. Then he got the stuff and he had already by that time committed to a couple other projects he was singing on. Maybe one was a Stryper record and a solo record or something. So it took another year for him to get the lyrics and the recording done. So there's 2 years. But the greatest thing about it was is I never even suggested any direction or anything. I just knew that from the conversations we had about growing up in LA and listening to certain kind of bands, that he was knew exactly what to do. And so I started getting the songs back one at a time, completed. And I was like mind blown 11 times, you know.
Wow,
like,
that's cool.
Like,
that's
holy shit, you know, like seriously, like holy shit, you know, this is fucking great.
That you opening know, scream of life. I had that fear. I had that reaction with the opening scream of life. I'm like, holy shit. Like, that's fucking great.
Right? You know, and especially for guys our age, because it still has this like really deep connection to those, that music we grew up on, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was just texting back. I'm like, I don't care what anybody says about you. I love you. You're the greatest singer, metal singer of all time. And you can sleep on my couch if everything goes wrong. And, you know, so high praise for Michael. And we got it done. And the reaction has been exactly your and my reaction so far is people go, I didn't know what to expect. And this is fucking great chemistry.
It really is. And I like the description I heard from you that I could not agree with more, because I say this about heavy music a lot. There's a fine line from being heavy and then just being like stupid, too heavy, not enjoyable. And it's a fine heavy line to find that happiness. And in the tracks that I've heard, you found that happiness.
I think it's experience. I think it's me listening to so much metal. You know, I'm 55. I still listen to metal. And I know that pretty much post-Pantera, I don't want to go there. You know what I mean? It's like Dimebag to me was the pinnacle of getting metal right. Like, mm-hmm. you know, he really understood what blues was and how it works with metal and how it attracts humans and how it feels good. Even with Phil Anselmo screaming in your face, Pantera feels good. It's like, ooh, this is, right. Oh, I like it. You know, it's like, oh, it's like, this is the heaviest Zeppelin ever, you know, or something similar.
Right.
So when doing the Sunbomb thing, or any metal I write for LA Guns, which we still do.
I just heard your cat meow.
I can feel it, you know, coming back to the speakers if something's getting borderline. Like, like, okay, I'm just being heavy there to be heavy, and that's stupid. You know what I mean?
Right. Like,
you know, what emotion's behind that? Oh, I just want to be heavy. You know, I got to, like, eliminate that emotion. It's like there still has to be some melodic flow. Like Sabbath, like Maiden, you know, like these Scorpions and things like that, where the song still comes first, you know, where it's still got to be a song. And then those lead vocal screams and the guitar whittly whittlies, you know, those are just Christmas ornaments. You know what I mean? But the song is the tree, you know.
Right.
But
is there a meaning behind the name, by the way? Does Sunbomb mean something that I'm not aware of?
Well, I mean, no. So... I mean, yes and no. So the name comes from my son, my oldest son, Jagger. He's a go-kart racer, and he has this yellow helmet that he calls the Sunbomb.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
So I was playing him a track a few years ago, right when we started writing. I go, hey, this is my new thing I'm working on. He goes, I hate it, because he hates music. And I'm like, cool. I go, but I need a name. And he goes, let's call it Sunbomb. I'm like your helmet? He goes, yeah, that's a good name for a band. I'm like, okay.
That's great. I love it.
That was it.
By the way, I love it. Like, maybe they were early on. Is Stryper actually all that religious, or do they just know where their bread is buttered? You know?
I mean, Michael's a smart guy.
Interesting answer.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've had conversations with him on the subject, you know, and he's a practicing Christian for sure. And it's not my place to, you know, to really.
I don't think you want to out anything during.
Well, I mean, I have no information that would out him. Yeah. But
no, he's also, by the way, well, I mean, I've known him somewhat well, not as well as you have for years. He definitely is a practicing Christian.
Yeah.
But I mean, they obviously know that their fan base loves what they do.
Sure.
That's right. And I think, you know, had I thought after meeting him and getting close to him that he wouldn't be able to deliver the most evil sounding vocals I've ever heard in my life, then I wouldn't have pushed the issue. But he can. And, you know, so like those lyrics are very open to interpretation. Obviously, we know what he's saying. You know, we know where he's going with it, But, you know, the cynical me is like, I'm Satan, he's Jesus, I'm Satan, he's Jesus. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of the fun part for me and the fantasy of, you know, man-made religions. You know, it's like, whatever. Right.
That's great.
I hope that was part of the conversation.
He knows me very well, you know, and I'm not even sarcastic. I just, it's a dad joke. Everything's a dad joke to me. You know, it's just like, that's a Guns N' Roses, you know, same thing.
So now the last couple of things, then we'll do the questions. There is an LA Guns show booked at Whiskey A Go-Go in June. Is that definitely happening or is it just in theory?
No. So our album comes out November 12th and we have shows right around then that are booked in California. And then our next Whiskey show will be New Year's Eve. That still, depending on where we are with the coronavirus. But right now, those are the only things that we've left on the table. And we literally had the agent just, you know, tell, I don't know, 80 promoters that yeah, we're going to start over again. You know, we got to pull all these shows down.
Oh, it sucks.
Yeah, I saw Instagram that you got your shot.
We kept pushing like this 9-month thing. Yeah. 3 months at a time where they would re-advertise, take it down, re-advertise. And it's like, you know, we have European festivals and tours in Europe. And it's like, you know, 4/5 of my band is banned from traveling to Europe still. You know, it's like I can't even get those guys in there. You know, the only reason I can be there is because I live there half the time. I have a wife and a kid there, you know? So I'm doing a tour in October in like this Rolling Stones kind of circus show with these Danish actors and stuff. So that'll be like my first taste of getting my feet wet again.
That sounds like something bizarre and interesting.
Oh, it's going to be so cool, man. It's just, you know, these actors come out, each one sings a couple songs, you know, with these other Danish musicians that are awesome. And I think we do 2 shows a night, which is like a little bit brutal, but it's the Rolling Stones. You know?
Have you picked up any Danish since you've been with your woman?
I snack a little dansk.
I'm going to assume that means a little bit. Am I right?
Yeah, very good.
Nicely done.
Min skilpel spist min kat.
Your cat brought in a mouse?
My turtle ate my cat.
Oh, close enough.
It is Mutual of Omaha at your house. Good Lord.
It is.
All right, let's do this, Shannon. Wait,
Can you see out the window?
Oh, look up.
Man.
I live in the forest.
That's nice. Yeah. Is that
If you looked out my window, you'd see another brick wall. Oh. I'm very jealous.
Is that a funky cat bed I just saw on the floor there?
Yeah, we call that the spaceship. It's like a thing. And both cats that are oversized Maine Coons both get on there together. It's like trying, like me and you trying to put, you know, children's tidy whites, you know, age 12 on.
I still try it once in a while. You gotta humble yourself every now and then. All right, Shannon, let's do this. Let's hit the first and we'll wrap this baby up.
The first time ever I saw Concert Detroit.
The name of the show, as you know, Tracy, meanwhile, we're just looking at your nose right now. It's a very strange angle. The name of the show is SDR, the Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We end the show by asking our guests, always since the dawn of time, their first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll, meaning the first concert you went to on your own volition. I want to go to the show, and it's going to be a band that we know, hopefully, not some local band we never heard of.
No, my first concert... I've always been scared of crowds and I'm agoraphobic. So, you know, it took me a while, you know, to go to an arena. I went with my mom when I was 6 to see Jackson 5 and Earth, Wind & Fire.
Wow. So my first concert was Earth, Wind & Fire also.
Awesome, right?
Great. Love them.
But the first thing that I wanted to go to was Van Halen on Women and Children First with my cousin Willie. And we went, and I drove. I was old enough to drive. I was 17. And he had a little vial of cocaine. So that was also the first time I ever tried any drug.
Wow.
So both of those things happen in the same night.
That's great. You know, by the way, we've said this many times. Many people have done two. We're still waiting for one that all three was the first night.
Wow.
That would be great. But so I know you don't, you're not a big drug guy anyway, but you did try cocaine a couple of times.
Yeah. And the first time when I was with my cousin, I don't think I even noticed it. You know, we went, you know, I think I went like, okay, you know, whatever. Went in to see Van Halen and everything was awesome. So, but yeah, no, drugs were never attractive to me. I just, family members, blah, 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 blah.
Your mother was, you said at the before the show, so your mother was arrested at one point for selling
coke. Yeah.
Well, that'll put you off coke, I would think.
Yeah.
And now the first time you had sex.
I was really young.
You can't beat, who was it, Shannon?
It was Shannon Larkin. He was 8.
Yeah, you can't, you're not going to beat 8.
8?
And he was proud of
it. It's not even possible. 8?
He was proud of it. Yeah, we have the story up online.
It was his, yeah, it was his. His babysitter, which was his best friend's older sister, which is technically rape, but he's very excited and happy about the story.
Yeah. So whatever your story is, Tracy, it ain't going to be that one.
Oh my goodness.
Let me roll back. When I was 9 years old, we had a daycare downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a girl that worked there that was 13.
Mm-hmm.
And we got in so much trouble because she wanted me to have sex with her and I didn't know how to do it. And I was 9.
In trouble because you didn't know how to do it or because they found out?
No, because they found out.
Okay.
But I had no idea. I had no clue what she was on about. We're laying in this bed and she's like, do this, do. And I'm like, what? I didn't even know what the concept was. You know what I mean?
I was going to say, yeah.
All right. You're just like, give me my Power Rangers dolls. What are we doing?
So the 8-year-old thing, that's fucking so bogus. Like, you know, maybe.
She like gave them both blowjobs is what happened. It wasn't sexual intercourse.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so then on his way home, he told his dad that, oh my God, it was such a great night. What's his name? Sister put my wiener in her mouth. And then they turned around and his father almost killed, you know, it was like a crazy story. It was a crazy story. Anyway, so.
Okay, that I believe that. I believe that. Okay. Yeah. I just pictured like, I didn't want to picture it. Anyway. So anyways, growing up here, I had a girlfriend named Jennifer McGill from junior high school. And we had known, we lived, you know, one block apart from each other on the same street. And I guess we were bored one day and she asked me and I asked her and then we asked each other and then we did it.
That's cool.
I was 12.
Now, when I know you worked with Gilby Clark a few times, Gilby coined this term on the show.
Nice segue.
Yeah, I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. It makes sense. He coined the term rock star sex. And what he meant by that is the first time you had sex because you know she was fucking you because you are you. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, oh, okay, your first groupie experience, whatever you want to call it. But like, he told the story where he got off stage and there was a girl just waiting in his dressing room that he's like, oh, okay, I know. So this is happening now. Like, he knew exactly that moment. Does that stick out in your head?
I think every time I've ever had sex was that moment.
Fair enough.
No, I, you know, it's hard to say, you know, I'm not that pretty of a boy, you know, to have had the luck.
Oh, fair enough. All right. I like that we're all referring to ourselves as a pretty boy. That's not as pretty of a boy. You make it sound so dainty and sweet, sir.
But I do know that my wife thinks I'm very attractive. That's all
that matters.
Not just your wife. I find you gorgeous.
And also your cat. Your cat thinks you're so good looking. It's bringing you gifts.
Yeah.
Well, my ex didn't. You know, she always wanted me to keep everything clean shaven, stay glammy, androgynous. You know, where my wife, she's like, I'm from Denmark. I want you to look like a man. You know what I mean?
See, I love that. And like, I'm like pissed off. Anybody who can grow a beard should grow a beard. Yeah. I'm 45 and I still can't grow one. So I feel like every guy who's able to do it should do it.
I'm starting to let mine grow a little bit. I haven't let mine grow in a while. I just, this is a. new thing for me. It makes me look.
It looks like I super glued pubic hair to my face. That is as much as I can grow.
Yeah. You got that kind of like Johnny Depp thing going on. It looks cool.
Aside from the Johnny Depp looks, but yeah, this is just horrible.
And you still, by the way, Bill, you have good hair. Bill, you have very good hair.
Amazing hair.
Yeah, it's because I haven't gone through puberty yet. That happens. Yeah.
Tracy, you still have pretty good hair. I give you credit. Yeah. My head and forehead just keep getting bigger and bigger as the years go by.
Mine's pretty big.
Well, yeah, everybody looks good. The thing is, Carmine Appice just decided that he's not dyeing his hair anymore. And I think he's 72 and he let it all go gray. It looks good. And I'm going to stop dyeing my hair when I'm 60.
You know what's weird? So, people think I dye my hair. I do not dye my hair. This is my hair.
Yeah, clearly. Mine, you could tell that I literally take shoe polish and go on my face, in my hair. You know, I'm holding on, man.
By the way, how does that work? Like, if he stopped dyeing his hair, when he's like growing it out, is it like a skunk thing where it's like gray? Yeah.
Beard right now, because it's time to dye my beard again. You can see like a little.
I see it on the sides. Yeah, that's why. By the way, the reason why I don't grow a beard is because it's so gray. Yeah. My hair is not as gray as my beard, and I don't want to dye my beard. It just seems like a lot of work.
Ashley Madison. Go check that. Go check out what that is.
Isn't that a website for people that want to cheat on their wives?
No, but it's similar.
It's Ashley Madison.
Yeah. I was going to say, they branched out.
And maybe he made a slip, and he...
This one is... Oh, I'm sorry. Madison Reed.
Wow. Okay, Madison Reed.
I guess it's a lot different than Ashley Madison.
Yeah.
This stuff, Madison Reed, and what it does is like you see some guys' beards are dyed, and you're like, oh, you know, like
right,
yeah. Look at your face, you know, stop that. This stuff, it kind of just goes into your this type of hair,
mm-hmm.
and it leaves such a trace of gray, like you can't see the gray, but it doesn't dye your hair completely dark. So it doesn't stick to your skin or anything.
My one question is this: so how often do you have to dye your beard?
Every 2 weeks.
That's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Well, see, I'm taking mental notes on this one because I've grayed, but instead of it evenly distributed, it's like, if you can see it, it's like that chick in X-Men.
Oh yeah, I mean, you can see. I have like gray.
I got that one streak.
That like.
You still got a great hair though, Tracy. Jesus, you're pretty full.
Yeah, you really do.
Rockstar hair. Then I have all this gray hair.
Yeah, man. And like, I look, or with a mom in Poltergeist, I look like her too.
I just like the idea of one of our listeners going, you know, one of our listeners, I'm trying to get my beard dyed. And next thing you know, I'm cheating on my wife at AshleyMadison.com.
Ashley Madison, that like, didn't a bunch of politicians and stuff get caught?
I didn't know if it still exists. I just remember that was a big thing for a while, for sure.
I have no idea why that just...
wink, wink. So the album is called Sunbomb. It's a new album coming out with Tracy Guns and Michael Sweet. Three songs are on Spotify right now. The newest single is Better End, which we're going to add to our playlist, the sdrshow.com/playlist. Your website, tracy.net, which I think is cool. You do guitar lessons there, which that's pretty fun.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, that's my job now. That's what I do for a living. And it's great, man.
That's amazing.
It's especially during this time where I'm 6 months in Denmark, I'm 6 months in here, I can kind of take my students with me because it's just like what we're doing now.
Right.
And it makes good bucks. And I'm playing guitar all day, you know.
Has it improved your skills because you're playing so much? That's interesting.
Of course, because I'm teaching, you know, most of my students aren't advanced. So I teach so much basics and like connecting the neck together to solo that I have to do these same exercises that they do, but I have to do it 4 to 8 times a day.
Right. You know, Bill, do you play any instruments, Bill?
Oh my God, no. I mean, I can't carry a tune. I tried when I was a kid. I tried to play everything. I'm awful.
I'm hard. I mean, my co-host Jay gets mad at me when I say I'm a terrible guitarist because he feels that I'm quantifying myself as a guitarist, which I'm really not. But I can. I fucked up because when I first started playing, this is back in my first year of college when I first started to learn, I'm left-handed. And at the time, we're talking, you know, 30 plus years ago, they told me you should learn right-handed because it's very hard to get left-handed guitars. And I feel that that prevented me, at least that's how I'm telling myself in my head, from ever getting really good because it never felt 100% right to me.
No, there's. I think there's a lot to that. Trying to force someone that is of a certain brain type to do something so foreign, like that's gonna screw you up.
I'm terrible. I know about. I know all the basic open chords, and I know some bar chords and some basic finger picking shit. But I would say on a scale from 1 to 10, 10 being a great guitarist, I'm a 2.5 to 3. I would say that's like being.
All you need to do. You tune, you take the low string off the guitar. So you have 5 strings. You tune this to an open G chord, G major.
Okay. My first lesson.
Right? It's as easy as that.
So by taking out the first string, it makes it easier to not fuck up. Is that what you're saying?
That's interesting.
Oh, wow.
That's it. And that's how Dolly Parton plays. I think she uses all 6 strings, but you just tune the guitar to 1 chord and then you use 1 finger.
And also Dolly Parton plays with her nails. That's what always blew my mind.
But the cool thing is that she does have an open chord. So she doesn't really need to fret that much with her fingers. She's extra cool.
She's really cool. The new LA Guns album is out in November. When is the actual full Sun Bomb dropping? The full album?
May 14th.
Tracy, I hope you come to New York with one of your bands at some point. It would be great to see you.
It'll be LA Guns. It will. And there's still, a measure of this pandemic thing, and my life has changed in a great way. I don't know how much touring I'm going to be doing from now.
Right. I get it. Yeah.
I'm not excited about it. I'm not. Right. I mean, I hate to be honest like that, but it's, it makes bucks and it's fun, but it's fucking boring, dude. It's so boring.
At this point, you've been doing it for fucking 30 years.
Yeah.
I get it.
And it's like such a weird guilt thing. It's like, I have 2 boys. And if I sit on a tour bus for 14, 15 hours a day waiting to play for an hour, what a waste of time, man.
Right.
It's a good point.
When Kevin DuBrow was still around, he told me that Quiet Riot, and you played with them for a little bit, I think, Quiet Riot once or twice, that they mastered the idea. They just would do weekend gigs. They would fly in, do 2 shows, fly back. He said, it's not as much money, but boy, is it fucking easier. And he was never on a tour bus anymore.
Yeah, I mean, there's some talk of doing that. Like maybe, and this is just hypothetical, but what I've been talking about with management is like next year, maybe doing 30 shows, all high quality shows, in different configurations. Like if we did play like a venue where we know we can do 2 nights, maybe we do our normal set one night and then play just Cocked and Loaded one night. Things like that. So to make each show more meaningful, for the audience and, bigger places, better air conditioning, shit like that. Right. Because, what happens with us is we do awesome gigs, but there's always 2 gigs a week that are so fucked up and weird.
It's right. You got to put it on a Tuesday or something like that. And
sometimes the weird gigs on a Saturday night, what I mean? It's like, in theory, you can stomach, okay, Tuesday and Wednesday, every day we're not playing, we're spending money. We go, we pick up the cash, but it's like, I can't do that anymore.
Well, now that I have my open G guitar tuning to learn, if you need an extra guitarist on the road, let me know.
Yeah. Open G. YouTube's your friend. YouTube is the guitarist's best friend.
Next time you ask something like that, just pretend like your audio's off.
Yeah.
That's the nicest way to get out of that request.
As we said, the Sunbomb album comes out in May. The new LA Guns comes out in November. At Tracy Guns on pretty much everywhere. And Tracy.net for all the guitar lessons and some other stuff. And LAGunsMusic.com as well. Bill, you want to plug anything?
Yeah, just Morning with Bill and Joanne at CompoundMedia.com, 10 to 11. Ralph's on a lot, so you'll enjoy that. And my co-host is really hot. So you Those are all true things.
Those are all true things. Shannon, your plugs?
Now you can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts.
Do you believe in ghosts, Tracy?
Do I believe in ghosts? I know that there's unexplainable energy around.
That's fine. That's a sensible answer. Ani, are you there? She's not there.
All right. She's been having internet issues.
She's having issues. She keeps cutting out. All right, so we won't let Ani do her plug. She doesn't get any. Follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton, my health and wellness podcast, Good Sugar Podcast. Hit the top 200 in the health and wellness category last week, which I'm happy about.
Nicely done.
Tracy, as always, man, you're just a fucking cool dude. You know, you are a fucking cool dude. I know you a long time and you're a good man. Thank you so much for taking the time out.
Good times, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Tracy.
For sure. Thank you, buddy.
Listening to the SDR Show.